Oh, man. Pale-faced Swiss. Pale-faced Swiss. That concert, that pit was fucking nuts. That was the craziest pit I've ever been in at Worcester Palladium. And I've got to be quite familiar with the Worcester Palladium in the recent months. Let me introduce myself here. This is Brian Lewis of the Spin Zone. Welcome back. 3 months. I know it's been kind of a whirlwind of 3 months. A lot of life situations have happened and everything else. And the wonderful life that we know today is modern world. Nothing is sacred. Nothing's eternal. Nothing's forever. That song has gotten me through a lot in the last couple months, let me tell you. So I'm Brian Lewis, host of The Spin Zone. That show was March 23rd at the Worcester Palladium. Pale-faced Swiss, Stick to Your Guns, who put on a hell of a show as well, and The Nasty, who are from Britain, hardcore band. They were amazing. That pit was fucking nuts, man. I can't get enough of it. I got literally kicked in the hip with a steel boot, and I'm still standing. So, for a 5'6", 135, soaking wet fella, did pretty good for myself. So today's episode being the first one, we're going to talk a lot about, kind of the first 20 minutes or so are going to be kind of about like what's been going on in my life the last couple months. Update you what's been going on, some sports thoughts as well, because we got March Madness, 4 number one seeds in the Final Four for the first time since 2008 with Auburn, Florida, Houston, and we'll go over that. Just very boring tournament. I was expecting some upsets. And then the NFL draft, which, is my favorite pastime. We're getting closer and closer and closer to April 24th, which is NFL draft night. Okay. So with that being said, let's start off with what's been going on in the world of music. So I'm a big music guy. Okay. I grew up a big hip hop fan. The whole Jay-Z, Nas, Busta Rhymes, DMX, Ja Rule, Nelly era. I think Nelly's trash. But that's the generation I grew up in. Eminem, 50 Cent, The Game, etc. And then that evolved into Bullet for My Valentine, Atreyu, Godsmack, etc. And then now I'm just a full-fledged metalhead. Schoolboy Q's album was dope. I am going to have to get into more hip hop in the next couple of months here because I need to change my mood a little bit. But let me tell you, man, as someone that's a fan of heavy music, the last 3 years have gained a lot of momentum for heavy music. Like, I'm starting to feel like hard rock is having the same kind of momentum shift that I saw with country when I was in college between like 2013 and 2016 when country started to take over. You start to see Sam Hunt, Luke Bryan, Chris Stapleton and Cody Johnson. Like when you start seeing those dudes swoop in country, and keep in mind Stapleton and Cody Johnson slap. Love, a big fan of those, both of those fellas. Lakeview as well. We'll talk into some of the country stuff that's been going on. But otherwise, like I've been to a lot of concerts. Now, none of the shows were that expensive, thank God. My last concert was Beartooth of January 2024, which I went with my friend Jake. And Plot and You, Invent Animate, who I never heard of before. They're pretty good too. And Sleep Theory, who I'll be seeing again in June. So made up for it so far. So catch your breath. If not for me, the sweater I'm wearing right now, although I'm in recording, so you won't see it. Archers. And what was the other band that opened for them? I'm trying to think. Archers. If Not For Me, Catch Your Breath. And oh my God, I can't think of them right now. I can't. Oh, Funeral Portrait. Oh my God, Funeral Portrait. Dark Thoughts. Yeah. And it's funny because February 28th, I was in Cambridge for that show. And I ran into the guys from Funeral Portrait at McDonald's. But I'm not trying to be that awkward guy to try to like get all the attention. Like they're trying to get in their mode for pre-show. All four of those bands put on a killer show. I fell and broke a rib, I think, or I bruised a rib. I don't know. I got hurt in that pit as well in the Middle East. Not a big fan of that venue, but that was a good spot. Good spot to be. And obviously, that was a killer show. That was a great lineup. Make Them Suffer and Like Moth to Flames were playing at the Paradise near Fenway. I would have loved to have split myself in half and go to that. But I'm sure Like Moth to Flames is one of my favorite metal bands right now. I'd love to see them again. Hopefully, they will be touring again in the next couple of years. They'll have an album out. Etc. And then on the 8th, March 8th, I went to see Imminence. Now, Imminence was supposed to have Landmarks open for them and Jaluka. Jaluka was amazing. Jaluka's mean. Jaluka's like one of the heaviest bands I listen to. Almost like if Baby Metal met Whitechapel or something. It was fucking crazy. But man, Landmarks couldn't make it from France. Now, Landmarks is a band I've known for a couple years. Lost in the Waves, a good song. Their new album comes out April 25th, so I'm very excited for that. All their singles so far, I'm a big fan. Sulfur, Bleed Red. I think it's like Sulfur 666. Not a big fan of that song. But the other new one, Creature, amazing. That came out last summer. I think that was the single they released last July. And I remember hearing that on the Orion YouTube channel, the breakdown, so that was dope. But Dreamwake from New Haven, Connecticut, filled in for Landmarks because they were stuck in France for a visa issue. And Dreamwake is like, they're a saxophone metal band, a kind of saxicore, if you will. Imminence put on a hell of a show. That was the best concert I've ever seen, like, that night. Like, I mean, maybe in the future I'll look back and I'll say maybe other shows are better. Like, as a concert junkie, now keep in mind I've seen Bad Company. I've seen Roger Waters. I've seen 311. I've seen fucking Incubus twice, and I love Incubus. It's one of my favorite bands from my childhood. You know, I've seen Bullet before, not sober, obviously, but I've seen Bullet for my Valentine before. So, like, out of all those bands, I saw Imminence put on a hell of a fucking show. And the thing is, they didn't even play anything from their December album that they dropped, which is like Those Who Seek, Proclaim, 86, Do. All those songs, that whole album, fucking perfect. That's a great album to play front to back. None of the singles really stick out, but that album, perfect front to back. It's amazing. It's a perfect fucking blend. And The Black, I still think, is one of the best three albums I heard last year from Imminence. So kudos to those guys, Eddie Berg and Harold and those guys from Imminence. They put on a hell of a fucking show. Dreamwake, I got the bump into those guys last night. Obviously, I'm recording on a Sunday, but I got to record. I got to bump into those guys last night in Lowell at the Taffeta Music Hall, a newer venue. Always nice to have a venue that's free parking, easy in and out. I don't even care about driving an hour, 20 minutes to see a show. That's amazing. Lowell's a nice city, better than Taunton these days, at least. So more going on, at least, I should say. Not better. That's not a right way to put it. That's a little arrogant. But like, it's a lot more going on in Lowell than there is in Taunton right now. So very excited about the way March turned out, but Imminence by far was a great show. And then Thursday night before St. Paddy's weekend, I saw Lakeview. Lakeview is kind of a country band. They're country core, if you will. So Cody Quistad from Wage War. Wage War is one of my favorite bands too. Love Wage War. Gravity, River, Manic, anything from that new album, Blur, or like Magnetic, all great songs. Amazing songs. My daughter loves them too. And my three-year-old daughter, at least, loves them. And they put on a hell of a show. And they got a great variety. It was, like, weird. It was, like, the one show I went to, I was like, oh, I don't know how many metalheads I'm going to meet here because it's a country show. But I met a lot of metalheads at that show. Like, I met a woman who went on one of the cruise ships, the metal cruises, like Dayseeker, Treyu, and all them. And I'm like, man, that fucking killer, man. I'm jealous of that. So Lakeview put on a hell of a show. They played a Lips of the Angel cover, which they just released on Apple Music. Check that out. Better than the original, if you want my honest opinion. Not a big Hinder fan, to be honest. And got a lot of love for those guys at Lakeview. Jason Cross, who opened, one of the opening acts. Jason Cross has become one of my favorite country singers. Again, not a big country guy, but if it's heavy, I fuck with it. So that's how I feel with it. Lakeview, and for it to be a Gillette, it was the old Toby Keith bar, Gillette Stadium. Now, for all of you non-Boston folks, pretty much from where I live to Foxborough, it's like 35-40 minutes away. And it's a very small venue. It's kind of cramped in there. If it gets a lot of people in there, it gets kind of cramped. The acoustics in there were kind of weird, but it was a good place. It was a good place to be. I've never always had luck at that bar when it was Toby Keith's. I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, but like I know like I've had some issues there in the past. But this time was awesome, awesome fun time and really enjoyed it. Fun place to be. And then Friday night on the 14th, I went back up to Worcester to go see Boundaries, Acres, Holding Absence, and Plot and You. Now, the Plot and You, I just mentioned a couple minutes ago, I saw them with Beartooth and Sleep Theory and Invent Animate last January, 24. And they were so good. That set was amazing. That pit was not pale face crazy, but that pit was fucking crazy. Also, met a lot of people, Western Mass. Shout out to my Palladium people, man. If you find this episode, shout out to the Palladium crowd. It's quite a community. Our metal community is awesome, I will say, up in the Palladium. Good people. We take care of each other. And I was not able to make it to Whitechapel. I would have loved to go to Whitechapel. I saw Whitechapel a long time ago. Not going to get into that. But I did get to see Pale Face Swiss, which was the song we opened with, River of Sorrows being their ballad. But they have a lot of heavy stuff. Nail to the Tooth, Enough, Orphans, great songs. They're just a fucking amazing band. A girl at the Catch Your Breath show that I met, got to be pretty friendly with over the last couple months. Because we ended up going to a lot of the same shows together, ironically. Like, our music tastes the same. So I happened to see her on the way into the Palladium sometimes, and she had put me toward Pale Face Swiss, and it was perfect. That band is amazing. Got me through a lot the last couple months. And very thankful. Music's amazing. You know, everyone's got music, gift their music taste, but heavy metal right now is in a great place. It's got a lot of variety. You know, if you're into Pale Face Swiss, Fever 333 could also be something you'll like as well. They put out a great album last fall. They're becoming one of my favorite rap metal bands. They're going to be touring with Hollywood Undead. Going to try and make it to that. In Providence, I just don't really like Providence that much. So I'm going to see if one of my friends can come with me to Providence that lives closer to there. So I don't have to worry about dealing with the shenanigans that can be Providence, Rhode Island. Because I'm normally a Boston guy. Like, I know how to get around the city of Boston pretty well. I just park in a garage, walk around the whole city, never have any issues. Done it for years, even when I was 18, 19, 32, probably will do it at 62. Don't matter to me. Boston's a very easy city to get around at night if you know where the fuck you're going. If you don't know where the fuck you're going, do not go to Boston by yourself. Not a good place to be if you're not by yourself. But if you know where you're going, it's a very easy city. Park downtown, get to the other side of town very easily. It's very walkable. Very walkable city. Never had issues. Everything's within like an hour of each other. So it's an hour walk, good exercise. Keeps me in shape. But transitioning here, and then that Pale Face show that I went to on the 23rd, amazing. Pale Face Swiss put on a hell of a show. That was the meanest pit I've ever been in. That shit was absolute chaos, which I opened with. So now pretty much where we're at, I have three shows in May that I'm going to try and hit up, at least two of them, but I got three on my list, and obviously there's one in April, but I don't know if I'm going to make it up to New Hampshire from Ashes to New and Asking Alexandria. So that's a little bit of a hike from Ashes to New. They'll be around again, I'm sure. Asking Alexandria, I've been around for years. I've seen them at Warped Tour a long time ago. And it's funny because I wasn't even in the metal when I went to that Warped Tour with some girl that I was like talking to at the time from college. So like I just kind of dragged myself there, and it's crazy because I was like a big rap guy. And then after that, I kind of became a metalhead after that. So like it kind of turned me to the dark side a little bit. Day to Remember, I think, headlined that festival, if I'm not remember. It's a lot. That shit was crazy. But Amity Affliction I saw for the first time. Looking forward to seeing them at the Summer Aloud, even if Aaron Stringer's not going to be in the band anymore. Summer Aloud also has I Prevail, Beartooth, who I've seen again. Parkway Drive, who I've been wanting to see for years. Years I've been wanting to see Parkway. I love Parkway. And I think Dark Divine, Alpha Wolf, they're all in that. That's a great lineup. That's going to be in Mansfield, so it'll be very close to home. Easy drive for me. And it's going to be a lot more fun now being sober at going to these shows, which is great. It makes life a lot better to be sober, honestly. It's not worth it. You can't be stoned or you can't be drunk all the time. It's just not a good way to live. So kudos to those fighting sobriety every day. It's a tough battle. Here we are now. Now we're transitioning after 15 minutes. Bullet for My Valentine, Trivium, August Burns Red, Bleed From Within. That's the Ascendancy Poison Tour. I love Bullet for My Valentine. It's probably my favorite metal band. My first favorite metal band other than Avenged Sevenfold. To be honest with you. And Avenged Sevenfold are fucking awesome too. Gonna be, I'm gonna have to catch that on May 2nd. And then Caskets and Memphis May Fire on May 10th. Memphis May Fire just put out a new album this week. So metal's in a great place. Architects, Spirit Box, Whitechapel, Memphis May Fire, A Day to Remember, all out there. Paleface Swiss came out in January. Just amazing, amazing time for metal right now. If you're into heavy music, Knocked Loose, of course, getting nominated for the Grammy. Gojira getting to perform at the Olympics. Gojira is one of my favorite bands growing up as a kid, too. That was one of the first heavy bands I ever got into, was Gojira. Yeah, so like, it's a great time to be a fucking heavy music fan. Also want to give a shout out from Lowell last night. Obviously, Dreamwake put on a fucking hell of a show. Vampires Everywhere. That was my introduction to them. Dead Fiction from Massachusetts. Going to be keeping a close eye on them. And then Cult is Black. If you want to see like an Avatar meets fucking Mudvayne, that's a good fucking combo. If you're into Mudvayne and Avatar, even Slipknot, they have some Slipknot, a lot of Slipknot elements. Cult is Black is amazing. They're a great fucking band. They put on a hell of a fucking show in Lowell last night. As I'm recording here on a Sunday. So, yeah, kind of going fucking crazy with the concerts, but you know, you got to enjoy life. And none of the shows are really that expensive. I think the most expensive ticket is going to be Bullet. Bullet, Trivium, Bleed From Within, and August Burns Red is $80. I'm not going to Spirit Box. I'd love to go to Spirit Box, but I'm not going to Spirit Box. I'm not paying $80 for Spirit Box. So you got to make some life decisions there. But if it's like $30, $40 show, and you have the ability to get there, transportation-wise, go. Fucking enjoy it. Live music, keep support the bands. Buy the merch if you can afford it. You know, just support the bands. Music is what keeps us going. Some of us, it's what keeps us going. And I got to meet the guys from Dreamwake last night. And looking forward to see what the fuck they come up with next. We'll be looking forward. I will love to see how they're going to tour next and what music they're going to put out. So now I spent 20 minutes talking about metal. So let's not continue this conversation anymore. Right now we're going to transition into the NFL draft. So I've worked for a lot of publications over the years, a lot of different online publications, NFL mock drafts, etc. And this is where I'm at right now with this draft, because I haven't really done a lot with this year. I had a lot going on in my life, just, you know, a lot of alterations that had to be done, and keeping it together and taking care of your mental health is very important. And it's something that I've always neglected. I've always put myself last, and I got to stop doing that. So just the brutal honesty, just being very genuine about that. So, you know, now that I'm putting myself first, it's a different conversation, if you will. So now I'm in a different place. I'm in a different place mentally. I'm not really tolerating anyone's bullshit anymore. So that's where I'm at. And we're transitioning now into this 2025 draft. The Titans have the number one pick. The Browns have number two, with both of those teams having kind of quarterback issues, especially with Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns. That turned into a freaking train wreck. And then you have number three with the Giants, number four with the Patriots, number five with the Jaguars. So kind of going over this top five of the draft, because the rest of the draft's very unpredictable, especially this first round. Because you got names like Jackson Dart, Tet McMillan, who could fall, but he's a top 10 talent. But like, I feel like this receiver class, because of how close all the talent is, guys could fall. This offensive line draft could also have the same impact, because Mbeu, Connerly, and Campbell are very elite offensive tackle prospects. And sometimes when you have like two or three really, really good prospects at the top of a draft, outside of the quarterback position, they tend to fall. So let's play a scenario out here. I'm going to play three different scenarios out with these top five picks. Okay. So, talking to, you know, Reggie Cardin on Facebook, because he commented on one of my posts, and he said, well, what about the draft? What did the Patriots do at number four? Now, let's start with the Patriots at number four. Okay. I think this is where the best place is to start with the draft, because I think the Giants are going to take Abdul Carter, the pass rusher, to put opposite of Brian Burns. They already have Andrew Thomas on left tackle. So they're not going to really go out of their way to pick a tackle number three overall. They already have Andrew Thomas. The Patriots have a very interesting situation at number four, because even if they had the number one pick, I'm not sure if the number one pick would add any value to that team. And I hate to say that. I know like Gerard Mayo, the whole Gerard Mayo mess exists. I get that. I kind of missed the window for that. But Mike Vrabel is a big upgrade as a head coach. Elliott Wolf seems to have an idea of how he wants to build the Patriots. They built quite a decent free agency group. Milton Williams and Stephon Diggs. And they put a team together. Now they released Juwan Bentley, but Juwan Bentley also tore his pec last year, so he wasn't really on that team. Didn't play a lot, wasn't a factor. But a good player when he was with the Patriots for 5 years. So they're going to have a need a linebacker. But, you know, it's not something you pick in the first or second round, really. That's something they can get later on in the draft or even a free agency if someone gets cut, someone gets traded, etc. Where the Patriots are at number four, it almost seems like they have to pick an offensive tackle based on the way that their free agency realm has gone. And that's fair because I think Will Campbell is probably as good of a pick it's going to get now. The Patriots have some history, if you will, picking a tackle at number four because in the top five before, because Matt Light was a top five draft pick, I think, back in 2001 out of Purdue. Now, he was Drew Brees' offensive tackle at Purdue. He was the fourth overall pick in the 2001 draft. That's wild. Fourth pick. So Will Campbell and Matt Light have a lot of similar. I think I see a lot of similarities between Will Campbell and Matt Light. Purdue, Matt Light, mind you. Both played in very wide open spread offenses. Obviously, I think Nussmeier will probably end up being at the very least, an NFL backup. Decent quarterback at LSU. And Brian Kelly, obviously, when he was at Notre Dame, a lot of offensive tackles, a lot of offensive guards in the NFL. So I think that the tutelage is there. Campbell's definitely got the pedigree. I do agree with Will Campbell that a lot of the bullshit talk about him falling in the draft is out of his control. The measurables are there. This talent is there. The matchups are there, etc. However, with Mbeu from Missouri and Connerly from Oregon, Campbell could fall just based on the fact that those guys are also fucking amazing tackles. Those guys are very good tackles. Now, offensive line busts tend to happen sometimes. They happen a lot, okay? I'm not going to lie. They do. They fucking happen. But you can't really blame that on those guys. Because, I mean, yes, for every Robert Gallery, which the Gallery comparisons with Campbell are not fair. Gallery was a guy who was a left tackle for a run-heavy offense. And a guy, I think Robert Gallery traditionally should have been a right tackle in the NFL early on. And maybe he could have been a guard that transitioned into a tackle. But Robert Gallery ended up being a decent guard for the Raiders down the line. Just not worth that number two pick that he got picked at because obviously they expected him to be a Matt Light, right? Now, the Patriots have had some success drafting offensive tackles historically. I know it doesn't mean anything to Elliott Wolf, but they have had history with left tackle because remember they went from Bruce Armstrong right to Matt Light, from Matt Light right to Nate Solder. And then Nate Solder left for the Giants, and then they've been kind of a little bit messy since then. So, I mean, yeah, there's that whole element of it for sure. But I think if you're looking at Drake May and you're looking at it you value this rookie quarterback. He had a hell of a rookie year. He stepped in, played really well. Even Joe Milton looked pretty impressive when he played in that last week against the Bills. So, if you got to take care of your quarterback, you got to get the guy to do it, right? Now, I think that's precisely what you have to do. Take care of the quarterback. Now, which tackle they want doesn't really matter. I think Campbell's worth the fourth overall pick. I think Campbell's a top five pick. I think Mbeo's a top 10, and I think Connerly is a top 12, top 13 player in this draft. I think all three of them are going to be in the top 12 at the very least. Even the Jaguars at number five could make a consideration for Mbeu or Connerly or Campbell. Mason Graham. We haven't even talked about Mason Graham yet to Michigan. Great defensive tackle. If Milton Williams didn't sign with the Patriots, I would probably lean Mason Graham number four because I think Mason Graham actually might have more of an impact than Abdul Carter because of the way Mason Graham is kind of a pass-rushing defensive tackle, if you will. I would love to see him with Milton Williams, but with Dietrich Wise. I think the Patriots have a lot of ways to go. They spent a lot of money. They have Christian Gonzalez at corner. They have Kyle Duggar at safety. So they have talent there. It just, obviously, when Belichick's son was the defensive coordinator, co-defensive coordinator with Mayo, that team was a top 10 defense right? So they have talent on defense, or they had talent on defense. I guess that's more the question that has to be answered. Now, going back to number one, so if 3 and 4 are going to be Carter and Campbell, what does that mean for number two with the Browns trade down? Well, if the Browns trade down, who's most likely going to trade up? My opinion, the Raiders. Now, the Raiders have Geno Smith at quarterback, so they have someone that can start next year, right? Is Shedeur Sanders worth the number two overall pick? And I think that's kind of a philosophy question. Now, Shedeur Sanders, when he was at Jackson State, put up hell of a numbers, man. Him and Travis Hunter, and even Travis Hunter could be worth a top five pick. I'm not on that tree, really. Will Johnson from the corner from Michigan, Benjamin Morrison, the corner from Notre Dame, Ted McMillan, the wide receiver from Arizona. Like, these are all very talented prospects. So, like, if you consider all those guys, you're thinking, like, why would the Raiders need to trade up to number two? Because I think at the quarterback position, you have to kind of make your move. Like, I think with the way the NFL is now, you're almost in a position where you have to make a decision early and often to get the guy. Because if you don't get the guy, you're at risk of letting another team take your guy. And I think that's where the Raiders are at right now. Like, yes, you have a decent quarterback in Geno Smith, who actually was pretty productive. But going from 6 to number 2 is not going to be cheap, even for the Raiders. Because, I mean, you look at the Browns. The Browns, they're going to be stuck in a situation with Deshaun Watson's contract regardless, okay? So if Watson's not going to play next year, then whoever their quarterback's going to be will step in and whatever. But if you trade up and get Sanders at 2, the Giants have Carter at 3, the Campbell at 4, Mason Graham at 5. The Browns are now at the number 6 pick. And the Browns will still have a choice of Javon Walker, who I think is a very talented edge rusher. I mean, he's not Abdul Carter, but I think Walker is a very good player as well, has a lot of upside. You could also look at a guy like a Malachi Starks, right, a playmaker, or Shamar Stewart from Texas A&M, who I think is another big potential guy. Mikel Williams from Georgia, another high potential guy. Mike Green from Marshall, another high potential guy. So, like, you have your choice of edge rushers. I think Carter is the cream of the crop when it comes to this class, especially considering what Penn State has produced at that position historically, especially with Adofe Owe for the Ravens, who was a late first-round pick and has kind of come into his own a little bit. But you look at the guys that could be available at 6, Ashton Jinty, Armand Mbeu, as I said already, Will Johnson, who I've said already, Jalen Walker, as I said already, Kelvin Banks from Texas is the fourth tackle, as well as Josh Connolly, Jahad Campbell, Mike Green, who I mentioned, Kenneth Grant, who I mentioned from Michigan, Josh Simmons. So, like, there's a couple of great tackles in this draft. So, I mean, if I'm the Browns, you know you're going to be on a full rebuild. Why are you keeping the number two pick in a quarterback class that you're not sold on? Now, in my opinion, I think putting Shedeur Sanders in the same locker room as Deshaun Watson could be a problem. And I think that could be a problem Deion could probably see as a problem. I think Shedeur, that would be a bad spot for him to go to Cleveland. Not just how I feel. And then down the line, right, and if you're looking at the Patriots situation, like I've explained, I think if you've got a young quarterback like Drake May, the Patriots have a pick number 38. Why not try to move up from 38, get into like the mid-20s, and try to get yourself like a Trayvon Henderson or a Quashawn Junkins or a Marion Hampton, where you can get a running back to pair with. And a Marion Hampton obviously would be the obvious one because he played at North Carolina and with Michael Carter at North Carolina. So there's a little bit of a Tar Heel connection there. Hampton, Carter, and May in that backcourt. I mean, in that back, oh my God, backcourt. I mean, March Madness month. In that backfield. And then you have Stephon Diggs, and you could figure out if Jalen Polk is going to produce. You can try to figure out how to get a hold of one of the tight ends in the class, because I think Tyler Warren's going to be probably a mid to late first round pick, unless there's a run on some of these edge rushers, a run on some of these receivers, a run on some of these running backs. We're definitely going to see two running backs pick in the first round. This is the year we're going to see at least two, because Jinty's definitely gone. I think Hampton's good, and I think one of the two Ohio State backs are probably good to go in the first round. Probably Henderson. Junkins is awesome. I think Quashawn Junkins almost reminds me of Ray Rice, almost. like kind of a mix of Ray Rice, Jamal Charles. Not as fast as a Charles, not as physical as a Ray Rice, but he's a mix of the two. Very productive at Ohio State, the national championship, Ohio State Buckeyes. Very proud to say that. Despite the fact we did not beat Michigan. Fuck. I know, that loss was so frustrating. But like, it's an interesting situation because even with the Browns, you could trade down and then the Browns will end up having like 67, 68, a first round pick next year, possibly. And then they'll have number 37 as well. So, I mean, a mix of all that could be Emeka Ibuka, Luther Borden. You could really revamp. I think this receiver class is super talented. If you pick the right spots, you get a running back, you get a wide receiver, you get an edge rusher, you get an offensive tackle. You could have a really productive – if you pick really well, you could have a quick turnaround the way that the Chiefs did back in the early 2010s where they had that deep 08 class. Even though they whiffed on Glenn Dorsey and a couple other picks, but they still had Chris Williams from Vanderbilt who stepped in at guard. They had Brandon Albert who stepped in at guard. No, Williams went to Chicago. They had Brandon Albert, and then they had they had the second round pick with Jamal Charles. So like they had a good draft, and it took them into that next era with Matt Cassel, Alex Smith, and eventually Patrick Mahomes. So like you have to kind of build a nucleus a little bit with Cleveland. Cleveland's starting from square one, and then if you look at the Tennessee Titans, they're kind of on square one too. And I think it's kind of crazy that I've talked about NFL draft for 10 minutes and haven't even mentioned Cam Ward's name yet. But Cam Ward is definitely a shoe-in number one pick. I think Cam Ward is a guy that, had he come out in last year's draft, I think he would have been a mid-second-round pick. But the year he had in Miami, impressive. He needed that year in Miami. I was really hoping for him to go to Ohio State. I'm glad everything worked out for Will Howard as well. I'm a big fan of Will Howard myself. But for Cam Ward, he had a big year in Miami, won the Heisman Trophy. Big fucking player. Love the guy. I think Tennessee's a good spot for him. They're going to be in a full rebuild, too. So that'll be exciting to watch. I'm going to be looking to link up with some of my old draft people, you know, Chris Ransom in particular, and talking about how this first round, second round could fall. Because if the Raiders and the Browns do a trade, that's going to really give the Browns a lot of ammo to play with, especially if they can get 67 and 34 or some combination of that. Because this is a good draft to at least do what the Chiefs did in 2008, which is just get yourself the individual talent all over the place, and then you'll be able to find at least two or three stars. Now, if Glenn Dorsey had stayed healthy, I think that 08 class would have been one of the better draft classes in modern history. But like you have Jamal Charles and Brandon Albert. They were good players for a long time for the Chiefs. So that was a good nucleus, if you will. And then they also had Curtis Lofton, too, I think, was on the Chiefs for a little while, too. So they had a good way to go. And again, that 2008 draft class was fucking crazy. Now, speaking of 2008, as we're transitioning into college basketball, four number one seeds in the Final Four for the first time since 2008. Now, 2008, I believe, was the year Memphis lost in the final to Kansas. Kansas was the other number one seed, I forgot earlier. So it was Kansas, Memphis. And I want to say that Florida team was number one, too. But this Auburn team, Florida, Duke with Cooper Flagg, it's been a weird tournament. I was expecting a lot more upsets on Houston, obviously. Houston's an awesome program. Kelvin Sampson, good coach. Indiana probably misses him right now. I remember those Derrick Rose teams because it was Derrick Rose, Antonio Anderson, Joey Dorsey, and Chris Douglas Roberts. That was like the core of that Memphis team that lost to the Mario Chalmers led, Cole Aldridge led Kansas Jayhawks in the final because Cal teams couldn't make their freaking free throws. And I remember being very aggravated that Memphis lost that game because I was rooting so hard for Memphis. So here we are in the Final Four. Now, Cooper Flagg. Now, earlier in the year, when I was a little more hopeful about Rutgers, Ron Harper's son and Ace Bailey, Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey were put on a show. Now, both of those guys will probably be two top five picks, maybe even top three. Cooper Flagg, by far, is the overwhelming number one pick. That dude's a fucking menace. Almost as if, like, he's interesting. Like, I don't know if there's a player like him in the NBA right now. Yeah. I mean, and then you have Chandler Parsons, who's a fucking idiot, talking about how, like, Dr. J wouldn't eat in this era. Like, get the fuck out of here. So, I think pre-tournament, I was thinking, man, Florida's so good. But I don't know if they were going to make it out of that first weekend because they got stuck with UConn. And then they beat UConn. And then I'm thinking to myself, Texas Tech's not going to beat them. They're going to the Final Four. They're going to win the championship. I still think Florida's the best team in college basketball. I felt that way for 2 months. I just don't know why I felt a little insecure about Florida going into the tournament. Maybe too good to be true because I think it's happened before. Yeah. And then obviously Sparty today against I saw the Sparty-Auburn game. Auburn went off to like a 17-0 run in the first half. And then Michigan State just couldn't catch up because they don't score enough. Too small, not big enough. I thought Michigan as a 5 seed would have been deadly. I think Michigan, this was a very good team. They're going to be deadlier next year. Indiana is going through a lot right now. So, I mean, the Big Ten is going to be a fucking mess. But Auburn, man, I'm not a fan of Bruce Pearl. It has nothing to do with the fact that pretty much like Alabama's been one of my favorite SEC teams with Avery Johnson and Nate Oates coaching the last 10 years there. I'm just not a fan of Bruce Pearl. I thought he was going to blow it. Good for him, though. And then talking about Houston, man, Kelvin Sampson. Now, this Houston team may not be. I don't like this Houston team as much as I liked some of their other past teams the last couple of years. But when you go in and beat a 30-win Tennessee team in dominating fashion, you beat Gonzaga, you beat Purdue, they beat Arizona. So, like, they had a really impressive run. Arizona, maybe not as impressive as years past, sure. But, like, you beat a Tennessee team that's 30-8 this season. You beat a Purdue team that was very good in the Big Ten. And you beat a Gonzaga team that, you know, played them close. And Houston played a lot of close games as well. I mean, Tennessee is their most dominant performance outside of the 16 seed, which, you know, is irrelevant. So I think looking at Houston, I think Houston and Florida would have been you know, that would be a fun final, if you will. But I think it really comes down to, like, yeah, I think Houston and Florida. I think I had Houston and Florida in the final when the first time I did the tournament. But I also was like, there's no way. You're not going to get as many upsets anymore with the transfer portal, obviously. I had St. John's in the Final Four. But I also wasn't anticipating Rick Pitino to basically bench R.J. Lewis. But now R.J. Lewis could be teaming up with Donovan Dent at UCLA. So imagine how that's going to go, Bruins fans. Imagine how that's going to go, Bruins fans. And then obviously the most heartbreaking news of college basketball is Juju Watkins with an ACL tear. That was bad. I mean, USC could have won the title this year. I mean, South Carolina's just rolling. Like, it's tough, man. I mean, when you look at the men's and the women's tournament, I was almost more excited for the women's tournament this year, to be honest. The possibility of getting, like, Paige Buchers, Juju Watkins, and South Carolina in the Final Four with UCLA. That I mean, the UCLA team is really good. I mean, the UCLA girls are on fire, too. So, like, there's a lot of good basketball out there right now, too. I think, you know, Paige Buchers put up 40 points in the Elite Eight. Dominating. I don't even think the team scored 50 points, the other team. So, like, she pretty much almost outscored the other team by herself. Paige gets kind of shafted a little bit because she's not Caitlin Clark. She's not quite on the same level as Caitlin or Juju, and it's clear as day. She's more injury prone than them too. But I still think looking at Paige Buchers, she'll be the number one pick in the WNBA draft. The same way Cooper Flagg will be the number one pick in this draft. And they're both going to be high impact players for a long time. Now, the pressure with both of them, especially Cooper, is going to be a franchise player. Now, that's a special talent. Those guys that you can't make franchise players out of thin air. That's, you know, sometimes not everyone can be LeBron James. Not everyone can be Carmelo Anthony. Not everyone can be, you know, I mean, we've seen it the last couple of years, right? Luka Doncic is that guy, and the Dallas Mavericks moved him for Anthony Davis. Still don't get that trade. Still don't get that trade at all. That was stupid. But hey, that's the life we live now, right? With the transfer portal, Donovan Dent going to UCLA. Good time. I think UCLA is going to be a fun-ass team next year. Mick Cronin, I think every year we always hear Mick Cronin's going to go to the Big Ten, Mick Cronin's going to go to the Big East, Mick Cronin's going to go to the ACC, the SEC, whatever. And he stays at UCLA. Now, UCLA and the Big Ten, it's kind of weird seeing the California schools in Oregon and Washington in the Big Ten. It is very weird for me. However, I got a lot of love for UCLA basketball. Always did. Always had a lot of respect for, you know, the Ben Howland Final Four teams, you know, Drew Holiday, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love, and Aaron Aflalo and Trevor Ariza. Fun teams. Loved those teams growing up. But I think with Donovan Dent coming in from Indiana, I mean, from New Mexico, sorry. And then you have RJ Lewis from St. John's. If they were able to get those two guys and then get another big, man. And then obviously Indiana hiring Dan DeVries from West Virginia. That's a good hire. I think that's going to be a seamless transition. I would think his son's probably going to be joining the Hoosiers. They missed out on Dent. They missed out on, they might miss out on RJ Lewis. We'll see what happens. I think the Hoosiers are in a good spot with DeVries as they were with Mike Woodson. I just don't, never liked the idea of Mike Woodson coaching the Hoosiers. Shout out to Jason Newcomb at the Mosaic Mind Sports, because we had this discussion back in November. With the state of Indiana basketball, we were very unsure with how the Hoosiers were going to look basketball-wise. And obviously, you saw what happened there. So, the next couple minutes, we'll close up here. A lot of complaints about the transfer portal in college basketball. A lot of complaints about the coaches leaving. This is the way I see it, okay? The schools... Now, I always say this all the time. I say this as someone that is a proud... I'm a hardworking motherfucker, okay? If your heart's not in it, your heart's not in it. You know what I mean? If you feel you have a better opportunity, you owe it to yourself to go chase that opportunity. That's the way I feel. As a player, as a coach, as an employee, as a boss, as a human being, we all deserve to be better for ourselves, right? But I think it's the way that we do it, right? It's the way that we do it. You know, you could say there's a better opportunity out there, but you also can't just like say, okay, guys, I'm sticking with you. I'm with you. You know what I mean? I'm with you. You know, I believe in you. And then go around and say, ah, fuck you. I'm going to go join this and I'm going to go fucking take care of myself. And that's fine. I mean, there are incredibly selfish people out there. Listen, the dating world's fucking ruthless. If you needed another subcontext into that, the dating world is fucking ruthless. Okay. Especially for men. Women have it a lot easier in that department. But, when it comes to sports, right, now you're looking at, like, the coach of Maryland, right? Now, Derek Queen goes out and hits that game-winning shot. They lose in the tournament. Now he's leaving. Dan DeVries at West Virginia, he leaves to go to Indiana. And I'm sure there's other coaches as well that are going to be in that scenario, you know, that are taking jobs. And we've seen it with Brad Underwood. We've seen it with, UCLA, with Musselman, with Calipari going from Kentucky to Arkansas, Mark Pope going from – he used to play Kentucky, from BYU to Kentucky. I think that was the best hire in college basketball last year, Mark Pope to Kentucky. I think that was the best win for everyone involved. Calipari gets new life at Arkansas. Mark Pope is the exact man to be at Kentucky because he's a Kentucky guy. He knows what the fuck he needs to do there. St. John's with Rick Pitino, that's fucking awesome. Love that shit. You know, it's great. Ed Cooley at Georgetown year two. We're going to hopefully see a year three turnaround with Cooley. Very similar to what happened at Providence, where year three is the year they're going to make the tournament. There's a lot of upside in college basketball next year with some of the old traditional powers. UCLA obviously could be a top five team going into the preseason next year. USC looks like they'll be a contender. So, like, that's dope. And for the women's game, if Juju Watkins comes back full strength, they're going to be a number one seed again next year because she's the best player in college basketball. Going away next year, especially with Paige going to be going to the WNBA. So, everyone's mad about the transfer portal. I just think it's hogwash. It's like, listen, you're an employee. You turn in your 2 weeks, you go start a new job, right? Or if you're a salesperson, you go sell another product. Like, that's the hustle. That's the world of hustle. Like, I think in the modern era in society, and I think a lot of this, and I see this a lot in soccer too, where people are owed loyalty. And this is more of a European thing more than an American thing. At least I notice. You know, you serve the club. You're loyal to the club, right? No, man, you're loyal to yourself. Once that contract's up, you're free. You know, not about you let the team figure out a way to replace you. You know, that's a European mentality. And I think a lot of Americans have adopted the European mentality. And I think America has to become a little bit more of a individualistic, selfish mentality, which is where the transfer portal. And I think a lot of fans hate that. But at the same time, broadcasters are selfish. They'll jump from job to job. I'll say it to myself. Media people are the biggest sellouts in the world. Look at Stephen A. Smith. Now he's talking politics. Chandler Parsons, former NBA player, shitting on Dr. J over here, thinking he couldn't dunk on Lou Dort like he wasn't dunking on Connie Hawkins or Kurt Benson after getting clotheslined, you know, on the way up to the basket. So I think there's a lot of nuance that has to be looked at with this transfer portal. Now, keep in mind, the transfer portal is very responsible for the production of the number one pick in the NFL draft that we talked about today in Cam Ward. Cam Ward went from Division I AA Incarnate Ward to Washington State. And then as a grad transfer, he went to Miami. You look at Will Howard. Will Howard played 4 years at Kansas State. Will Howard went to Ohio State and won a national championship. Quashawn Junkins was at Ole Miss. Transfer from Ole Miss to Ohio State, won a national championship. Obviously, there's a couple of other examples at Ohio State as well. Sonny Styles, who came from Georgia. Sonny Styles came from Alabama. Seth McLaughlin, who was a big piece on our offensive line, transfer. So I think the transfer portal has created a window where, yes, the bigger programs are going to feast. But guess what? That's the way the world is. And I think that's a more of America has to realize that corporatism, and I'm not going to get into politics too much more, but corporatism is bad. Private equity is bad. But at the same time, it creates opportunities for these players to shine. So yes, there's nuance. And I think the nuance is the beautiful thing about sports. And that's what the transfer portal is. And I think actually the transfer portal has made college basketball a better product, despite making it harder for high school kids to get into college basketball now. Because here's the thing. You could be a freshman, go and play at a mid-major, like a St. John's, even a Providence or BC or whatever, right? Play at a school that level, even like an Austin Peay or a Binghamton or an Albany, you know, a lot of these Northeast schools, Stony Brook. You can go to one of those schools, drop 25 points a game, and then all of a sudden Rick Pitino will come grab you to play at St. John's. Or, you can go play at Virginia. The guy that's going to replace Tony Bennett, obviously, is going to have a tough time replacing him. Or you can go play for Hubert Davis in North Carolina, right? Like Caleb Love going to Arizona. You know, it's a great opportunity. And sometimes, like, young kids, 18-year-olds going to college, kids transfer colleges all the time. Why do we care about college athletes and their freedom to transfer schools? Because I went to Curry College. If I went out of my way to go transfer to Boston University or Northeastern or Suffolk, I had the freedom to do that. But because I play football, I wouldn't have the freedom to do that. Or because I play basketball, I wouldn't have the freedom to do that. Or because I play baseball, I wouldn't have the freedom to transfer schools. Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here. This is that, you know, Southern redneck fucking Republican ideology that, like, you're owed loyalty to who gives you this and you deserve to make nothing. And this is the whole thing. Now, I'm not a liberal, but that's that fucking SEC mentality, that Alabama redneck fucking Cletus mentality that needs to die with college sports. Because you know what? It is pro sports now. It's all professional sports now. Okay. And I fucking love that because these guys deserve to be rewarded for the fucking results they produce on the field. And that's not something I'm going to stutter. And that's not something that I'm going to feel bad for, quite frankly. I stick with that. And that's the way we'll end it. This is the Spin Zone episode 1. And we have a lot more fun coming forward. Enjoy.